My name's Derek Rayner. I was born in Rothwell in 1942, and I grew up in Rothwell. My mother, she was a school teacher and she taught at Rothwell School. My father, I didn't know because he died around about 1943, just after I was born.
How was it that you came to know about Woodlesford Station?
I got involved in taking train numbers when I was at school, and Woodlesford Station was probably the closest place that I could actually get to see trains and take the numbers.
Can you remember, when you say you got involved, can you remember the first occasion that you went?
No, unfortunately, I can't remember the first occasion I went there, but being at school in Wakefield, I joined the Transport Society because I was interested in steam engines and taking train numbers. We organised trips from school to depots, and I wanted to continue what I was doing. I had a bicycle, and therefore I rode from home in Park Lane at Rothwell to Woodlesford Station, because that was where the mainline locomotives went through.
And how old would you be then?
I guess I'd be about 9 or 10 at that time, and going on from there, my interest in steam locomotives and railways blossomed.
And when you got to the station when you were 9 or 10 years old, then what, can you remember how you approached it and what you first saw, what the scene was like?
At that time, the station, I used to come down the hill past the church on my bike and round the corner, and I came down the slope onto the station platform, and it was station just more or less as it is now, I guess, with one platform one side, the crossing in the middle, and the other platform going down to the signal box by the bridge.
And what about the station buildings?
The station buildings were as they'd always been, I guess, at that time. They were pebble dashed, gas lighting outside and inside, the station master in there, who eventually I got to know, one or two porters who busied about doing what they were doing, a booking clerk or two.
When you say you got to know the station master, who was that and what was his name? What was he like?
The station master that I got to know was Tom Swaby, because eventually I started working for the railway, and of course I then had the facility to use the station for nothing, for free as it were, and I was a more regular visitor at that time.
Can you remember what the paintwork was, what colour it was?
The paintwork at the time I first remember, difficult to remember, no, I don't think I can remember. I certainly remember station signs, and at that time they would have been orange with white lettering, because it was North Eastern Region.
What were the trains that you can remember then? What memory have you got about, as it were, being a train spotter and seeing the trains?
The trains that were running through the station at that time, are the major trains, of course, were the expresses, which didn't stop. They were the Thames Clyde Express and the Waverley, usually with a Jubilee or a Scott on the front, and also quite a number of coal trains. They would be unfitted at that time, I guess, with WDs and LMS4Fs, LMS280s, the 8Fs, very common attenders.
Was it a quiet place, a busy place? What kind of an impression of a station was it?
During the time I was there, I guess that there would have been quite a number of expresses come through. There were stopping trains, of course, and it was always busy. There was a lot of coal traffic about, local traffic and also long-distance traffic going from the Midlands up to Scotland.
Now, paint a picture of the people that were there. Who do you remember seeing on the station?
Station staff, I remember, certainly were George and Fred, and also there was a senior clerk whose name I can't remember, and also there was another guy I used to travel into Leeds with quite frequently. He worked at Woodlesford at one time, but in addition to that he'd also worked at Robin Hood Station on the ex East and West Yorkshire Union Railway when that was still open. There were certainly lorries coming to and from carrying parcels away, but I didn't get involved with them at all.
Was there any other traffic that passed through?
Traffic that came through parcels vans quite frequently, and there were also, towards the latter end, a lot of oil traffic as well. As time progressed, I got involved with work, and I joined the railway as a sandwich course student, which meant that part of the time I spent at college, part of the time I went to, in that instance, a railway works, and I spent quite a number of 6 months at Darlington up in the North East. At the time I was at college, I was travelling to and from Bradford, and therefore I used the train on a very regular basis, both from Wollaston in the morning to Leeds, change at Leeds, and on occasions I caught a through train from Bradford that actually stopped at Wollaston on the way through to Sheffield.
Just describe the journey then. When you were off into Leeds for your courses, tell me what train you caught and what the scene was as the train came in and then as you went off towards Leeds.
In the morning I used to get the 7:59 train from Wollaston in towards Leeds. Usually it was a 4F with two or three coaches on a local train which perhaps had originated in Normanton. It was always busy in the morning because the one before that was about 20 past 7 and there was another one probably half past 8 time, and therefore the four coach stopping train going into Leeds was quite busy with people going into work. Invariably we came out from Wollaston and were able to look down on to the canal and the river on the right hand side as we got past the sidings that held the trains going to and from the power station, and then a little further on of course the marshalling yards in and around Sturton. Invariably, for whatever reason, traffic regulation etc, we stopped at Whitehall Junction because it got known as Stophall Junction, did that before we managed to get a platform in Leeds. And in those days the ex-LMS side, as it were, of Leeds were still open. We used to run into platform 3, 4 or 5 on the morning, and then I had a quick dash across to Central Station to get the DMU along to Bradford. The steam engine that pulled the 7:59 was a local goods engine, actually. It was an 060 tender engine, and there were four coaches invariably, which were oldish type coaches because it was only a very local train that we used to catch. Coming home, it was probably different because it was a much bigger train, 4 or 5 or 8 or 6 coaches coming home, usually with a 5MT or a Black 5 460 passenger locomotive on it, going on the journey down to Sheffield. So that was a longer distance train. In the first instance, the local train going into Leeds on a morning was usually a non-corridor train, just compartments, and it had started off from Normanton on damp mornings. Of course, the dampness had got into the upholstery and it all smelt a little damp. Also, of course, steam heating through the winter made the interior of the coaches somewhat damp as well. A nice sort of musty smell, which you either like or you don't like, I suppose, at the end of the day. The seats right across, nicely upholstered, usually a mirror in the compartment, perhaps one or two railway scenes which have subsequently become well sought after by railway enthusiasts. As time progressed, I got a camera, and that of course meant that I went out to take pictures of trains. Not only did I take pictures of trains, I took pictures of buses, but going to and from Wollaston on a daily basis at one time did prompt me to take photographs at Wollaston station, not only at Wollaston but also at other locations back and forth along the line. With the bike I was able to go down to the bridge just a little towards Leeds from there, and along the riverbank on occasions, and through the fence, and take pictures of unusual trains at times. In the 1970s there were diversions on a Sunday and we got Pullman trains coming past with Deltics on, and that was, from that point of view on the Midland line, that was most unusual, so it was a scene worth recording. It was also a sensible thing to do to take commoner garden trains, and so there were freight trains, coal trains with the locomotives on, the 4Fs or the 060 goods engines that were quite frequent visitors going through Wollaston, and also there were parcels trains with Black 5s as well as regular other regular expresses going through.
Were you conscious that you were recording something for history?
I don't think at the time I was conscious of the fact I was recording things for posterity, as it were. It was just something that was there. It's only in hindsight that you realise that you've actually done that sort of thing, and it was just seemed at the time to be the natural thing to do. The station master's role at Wollaston, I guess, actually went as far as Waterloo and in one direction towards Leeds, and perhaps in the other direction towards Methley. He would have had the sidings to the colliery, Water Colliery, to look after in his jurisdiction, and also in the first instance when I was down there on a sort of regular train spotting basis, there was quite a number of lorries coming to and fro with parcels traffic. The station, it was very close at hand, of course, as far as I was concerned, in the first instance, living at Rothwell, and then when I got married, I moved to Woodlesford, and consequently I used it as a normal commuting station. And as time went on, of course, we got away from steam, we got onto diesel multiple units. There were more trains, but equally it was always a struggle to actually get people to understand that the station was there. It is a little tucked away in its cutting, as it were, and its approach from Station Lane is not particularly good, and so it did tend to hide its light under a bushel. It was a very good and easy way to get into Leeds, only about 10 minutes or so into Leeds, and certainly quicker than the parallel bus service. Eventually, of course, the station was rationalised. It had electric lights put on to replace the gas lamp, and eventually we got onto the PTE, and they chose to knock the station building down because it was no longer needed, and erect bus shelters. I don't like to see things of that nature happen, but nevertheless, in the word of progress, I suppose it's inevitable that they don't want to pay for the maintenance of a building which there's nobody there anymore, and consequently it had to go. Going back in time, I have been interested in things in and around Woodlesford, because having lived there, it was the natural thing to be involved with. But the sidings down to the colliery also included sidings to Armitage's brickworks and stone quarry. My steamroller that I owned from 1964 onwards used to be kept at one time on the top of the stone quarry, and consequently there were railway lines. I lived in the area of Eshel Lane, Linwoods, etc., and I remember the railway line going down between the two lines of cottages, or two lines of houses, going down underneath the colliery line and curving round and coming back up to the main line to gain access onto the station, so that there would have been traffic in and out of the station area, down to both the colliery and also, from my point of view, more importantly, perhaps to the brickworks. When I first was going round in that sort of area in my youth, which would be probably about 1950-52 time, I remember the railway line. We used to walk up and down the railway line, up the incline, and I have maps which show that railway line looping round, and also onto the canal bank, of course, where the colliery used to send coal away by canal. Well, my interest in railway really was the fact that I used the station. I was a railway enthusiast and became a steam engine enthusiast, and that transferred my sort of allegiance, as it were, from railways onto roads. I, in the early days, was a member of the Middleton Railway Preservation Society. The problem with railway preservation is that once you've gone from point A to point B, the only place you can go is back to point A. And I got to know in the early 1960s through college that there was a whole new world out there of road steam engines, which I had no knowledge of previously. As a result of that, talking to various people and putting one's hand in one's pocket along with other parts, we finished up buying steamroller in 1964, and things went on from there.